This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we look at OpenRiot coming to the GTA, Twitter finally rolls out anti-harassment tools to everyone, and Google's handing out $20 credits to Chromecast owners. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 84 for Monday, August 29th, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And I'm Derek Cthulhu Silva.
Cthulhu Silva, he's back again. Oh dear. This can mean nothing but trouble, but that's all right. It's late fall. See?
Do as I say and you shall be fine. That didn't really sound like very official. No.
And I bet that doesn't work with your wife either.
Other way around.
Yeah, usually that's the way it does. Yes. Let's hope they don't listen to this one. Anyway, as I was trying to say, for my brain completely froze up, it's the dog days of summer.
It is.
The heat and humidity really needs to go. I'm getting quite annoyed, and I'm getting quite grumpy.
Thursday, high of 22, low of 10, I heard.
Is it going to stay like that?
I don't know. I didn't know past Thursday.
Not. I guarantee you it won't. Yeah, I know. It'll be nice. But yeah, it'll be nice to get that cooler weather. This is truly is the dog days of summer. It's kind of that. Normally, not a lot of tech news, but we actually managed to find a few things, including a big announcement from Apple, just late-breaking news. We're going to cover that today. But first of all, we're going to talk about inner-city ride-sharing. In specific, a brand-new company which is targeting the GTA. I always wanted to say all points east. No, but to smaller towns, stuff like that. Tell us about this. This is your story. You found this.
Yeah. So, Intercity, or sorry, what's the name of the company again?
I know. We're gonna have a fun night.
Yeah. It is called OpenRiot. They started a company in Kingston and LA. The gist of this is that Queen's University students driving back to Kingston this September from Toronto will be among the first to participate in a ride-sharing program along mostly untouched real estate for rideshare startups, which is, of course, the 400 series highways and some country roads. To quote one of the co-founders here, Owen Scott, he said, "Our focus is entirely on travel between cities, so we're not looking to go up against Uber and Lyft for the downtown core in Toronto." I would say that's smart. He's an Ottawa native. He lives in LA now. So they debuted in California back in March. And as of Sunday, it shows that the website shows that dozens of drivers are offering rides to strangers in the coming days, mostly around the U.S. West Coast, but also in Texas, Britain, and Europe, which is not a place by itself, but that's fine.
The Brits have their ways, it might be, but anyway.
Sure. Some of the drivers offer a lift for less than $20, while others are looking for more than $300 to take a rider across the country. Not a bad deal, actually. OpenRiot is not operating in the GTA quite yet, but it does consider it to be one of North America's most lucrative regions for ride-sharing companies. To quote the co-founder again, Owen Scott, "You have Kitchener, Waterloo, Kingston, all those towns out there that are relatively poorly served by both train and bus transit."
Right.
End quote. I wouldn't say it's that bad. It's certainly getting better lately. But yeah, I would say there's still room for improvement and certainly room for Open Lyft to come in and make a few bucks. Your thoughts, Stuart?
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes you look at Kijiji or Craigslist and that, and you often see, or even Facebook, you'll often see people saying, "Oh, I'm going to Toronto for the weekend," or "I'm going here. Is anyone else going?"
Right.
Or "Is anyone coming back on a certain day? I'll pay for gas."
I usually see that on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Depends, who it is. Usually when there's festivals on and stuff like that. I think it could be a good idea. Apparently, it's considered a carpool vehicle under the Public Vehicles Act.
Yep.
So they don't need a special license or anything like that. And
yeah,
as you say, as long as it's on a cost recovery basis. So, yeah, I think this has potential. I think it's like anything else. You kind of have to use your best judgment. If some guy shows up in a van saying free ice cream or something, and he's wearing a clown suit, you might want to consider maybe not.
Or anybody in a Volkswagen diesel vehicle right now, that's probably a bad idea.
probably as well.
Or definitely. One of those old Volkswagen vans, the minivans from
the smoke,
40 years
ago. With the smoke coming out. And I'm not talking about smoke coming out the engine.
No. Although
that might be your thing. But, you know. Got those surfboards on there. You know,
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we started in California. We ended up in Toronto, dude.
Yeah, dude. What happened? How did we get across the border?
Exactly.
Why do we even have a passport, man?
details. But hey, apparently it would still apply. So if that's your thing, then hey.
Yeah.
Sounds like open ride. You know, I like the one thing Scott says here. Like, you'd rather go on open ride to get a cool person to chat with you for 4 hours in your car than drive alone.
You know what? A cool person. I would say yes. Like, I drove down to North Carolina for a wedding back in 2007 or so.
Right.
And just so that I wouldn't fall asleep at the wheel and hit something or kill myself, okay. I brought along a friend and I was like, hey, I got this wedding in North Carolina I go to. I really don't want to go alone. You want to come? And she was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Mm-hmm. And so we both took a couple. Actually, we didn't even need to take time off work. It was like a left on a Thursday, had the weekend sort of thing. And, and it was a lot of fun, and it was great having somebody else to talk with. She slept most of the way, but at least, like, if I was, like, falling asleep at the wheel, I'd be like, Jill, wake up. Let's just talk to me or something. But, and, like, on the way home, we drove, like, on the way there, we drove through the night. I picked up at, like, 12:30 in the morning, and we drove all night into the morning and got to North Carolina, like, hotel check-in time. It was like perfect timing. Excellent. But on the way back, we left in the morning and got back to Canada pretty late. So it was nice to have somebody else in the car.
Yeah, I've done the run to Cape Cod in Boston. Yeah, that's towards that last hour or two, you're really starting to feel it. So what a good idea.
So why not have somebody pay you for gas, and maybe you've found a new best friend? Who knows?
There you go. Someone to buy you a coffee once in a while, you know.
Yeah, for that too.
That would also be good as well. Okay, Twitter, about bloody time. Well, about bloody time. Apparently, they've begun to offer some anti-harassment tools to every user. And these aren't just verified users with the blue check marks. In fact, you know, in other words, previously stars and movie stars and VIPs and that.
Yeah.
I know you tweeted that you got it. I noticed I got it too.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, users are going to be able to limit notifications to see only the people they follow. So I like that. That will remove any tweets from strangers and those who use Twitter for abuse and stuff like that. They're apparently expanding the quality filter. So particularly newly created accounts are going to be automatically filtered out, because that's what tends to happen. It's like, you know, it's like smashing a cockroach. You smash a cockroach and then two more of his buddies show up, right?
Yes. Yeah. No,
what do you think about this?
I think it's great. It's I hope that the delay in getting this out to everyone was so that they could spend time fine-tuning it with celebrities and journalists and, you know, other talking heads on TV and that sort of thing. I was really happy to see it. I was happy to try it out. I don't, thankfully, have a need to go really strict on this sort of thing. So I've got the quality filter on right now. But I did leave the option open for me to see all notifications. However, I only get like a push notification on my phone, what have you, if it's somebody I'm following. So I'll still see all the replies, all the mentions, all the retweets and stuff. But, I still only get push notifications if it's somebody I follow. That's 200 and some accounts. So that's most of the ones most of the people I engage with on a regular basis. So I'm happy. I really hope this helps deal with some of the harassment and bullying issues that have plagued Twitter the last 2 or 3 years, and that it will be a more friendly place for minorities, for women, for blacks, natives, Muslims, etc. Like it's gotten really out of hand.
I know myself, I've disengaged quite a bit, especially on the political realm, because it's just getting stupid. just getting absolutely ridiculous. And I got better things to do with my time, which is a shame because I'm probably am missing out on some quality things.
Sure.
But yeah, Twitter just, you know, and we've seen some high profile cases where stars and that have left because of the abuse and that. And, mm-hmm. and frankly, yeah, it's from trolls who have nothing better to do. And it's a real shame. So yeah, we applaud Twitter for doing that. And hopefully, It meets with some success, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and in the link that we've got in the show notes, it actually shows you where to enable it and what options are available. So feel free to check that out if you are having problems or you just want to tighten up what you see.
Exactly. Okay, moving on. There's a story here from the CBC about the push. Yeah, see, Radio Canada, the push to teach coding in school. I wouldn't call it an opinion piece, but it's basically, you know, they're talking about what we've heard before about computer programming should be taught in school as a second language. We have organizations like the one your wife's involved with, Ladies Learning Code, mm-hmm. and things like that, and they do a really, really good job. Some kids are learning at summer camp, but there seems to be a real push to see programming integrated into school curriculum. I'm going to put my devil's advocate hat on for a minute, and I'm just going to relay what I've also heard, where some people are saying, do we really need everyone in the world to become a developer? Or would it just be enough to teach them some of the basics just so they can kind of understand? And I think there's a bit of confusion where some people are thinking a lot of these groups or a lot of people pushing for this, they want everyone to be programmers. And that's really not that practical, is it, Derek?
No, it's not. And thankfully, that's that message by hook or by crook does get into people's minds. But I know that that's not the focus for groups specifically like Ladies Learning Code. Ladies Learning Code is more about empowering people, getting them to think about technology as something they can use and engage with actively, as opposed to simply consuming the apps and the websites that they're on. You know, knowing that they are capable of producing that sort of thing by themselves if they really need to or if they want to, and showing that it's not magic. It's hard work. And just like 150 years ago, you know, a lot of people could tell you how something was made, or, you know, mm-hmm. could come up with some sort of reasonable explanation of how some sort of, you know, mechanical device or something they have in their home was put together, a ceramic or an outdoor water pump or something like that. You know, you could look at it and be like, okay, yeah, I can see how that's built. Technology really abstracts that. Right. You know, you have a tablet which just boots up and you're in, and you know, you have all these apps you've downloaded from an app store that is vetted, and maybe they're free, maybe you paid for them, but regardless, they're just there. You didn't have to do a whole lot to obtain them, and then you end up using them, and whether you like them or not, you know, you use it on a daily basis or use it a few times and you delete it and you move on to the next thing. It really doesn't show people how much time and effort goes into those sorts of things. And so
Right. One
of the goals I know of Ladies Learning Code is to teach people, here's the sort of effort that's involved. Here's how you can be a more active participant in your tech-heavy daily life.
Right.
And that sort of thing. And so Ramona, who's the columnist, so this actually is an opinion piece on the CBC
here. Well,
that's
the way it was worded. Yep. They didn't clearly define it as such, but
no.
I'll give them that.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, she's got some really important information here and some, and mm-hmm. some decent opinions from various people. But no, even as someone who works for a web development agency, builds his own websites, wants to learn how to build his own apps, etc. No, it's not for everyone. Realistically, it's a skill set that not everyone will be able to grasp totally. Mm-hmm. You know, even in the next 300 years, there's always going to be a need for other skills that people will bring to the table, whether it's mechanical engineers or just designers or product managers and that sort of thing. And that's really what rounds out the rest of the industry. So,
right. And,
but,
and
sorry,
I think,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just going to interrupt. Yeah, and I think that's the important thing. We don't leave behind skills, as you say, mechanical engineering, carpentry, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, oh, you know, why do we need machinists? Computers can do it all. Well, yes and no. There's still going to be stuff a machinist may still have to do. They may be running a machine to do it instead of sitting there by hand on the lathe. But you're still going to need those other skills. And one of the, I think some people are, you know, and some people out there are kind of concerned about, you know, as long as we're not doing this teaching programming to the exclusion of other things.
Right.
I think we saw that 20, 30 years ago where there was really a push for, you know, schools wanted the kids to get into white collar jobs and, you know, blue trade or blue collar sort of jobs in the trade were considered like second place.
Yeah.
And that's not nearly the case. So we need to, I think it's a good balance we need. So yeah, I think just like, you know, showing someone to do this, I remember in school, we had a thing where we would spend one semester, but we'd spend 2 weeks in the wood shop, two weeks in the plumbing shop, you know, kind of a going through all the trades.
Yeah.
And I think that's also important, just like learning code or even like web design, like actually designing.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like Photoshop, stuff like that. So I think we need a good balance.
Yeah. And that's, and that, thankfully that's exactly what I had in high school. I had the option to take, what we called the tech courses, but there were programming courses and keyboarding courses before that. And then there were the tech design courses. And so you got to learn how to use AutoCAD and that sort of thing. And then the year before that, we actually learned how to design an actual physical object and then turn it into the actual physical object itself. So me and my group, I remember in grade 9 tech, we built an air hockey table. A small air hockey table, but right. Like we actually literally had to figure out the fan and how much air pressure we needed. And, you know, now not too much air pressure so that, the little puck that we had wouldn't fly right off the table. And then, you know, what, build and machine, the paddles and all that. And it was a lot of fun. And I think what's nice about the, yes, there's a huge focus on learning how to code, but we have the whole maker movement, which is, yes, some of it involves code, but you use that code to actually make a physical device, whether you're programming a lathe or a CNC machine, or you're taking soldering skills or carpentry skills and applying them or mixing them with the coding side. I was listening to the new Screensavers, and a gentleman named Aaron Newcomb, who also hosts Floss Weekly, he owns and runs a makerspace in Venetia, California, and he used a Raspberry Pi to set up a custom sprinkler system. So, mm-hmm. you know, so he had to dig out his lawn, parts of his lawn, lay down pipe, get everything connected together properly. So, you know, decent plumbing skills to make sure things aren't leaking. And then you take the coding skills to take some Python script, make some configuration changes. But ultimately, somebody already has a web interface that you can install on the Raspberry Pi and control certain valves. So there's a little bit of wiring because there's a control mechanism on the Raspberry Pi itself that you need to wire in, a little bit of plumbing, a little bit of coding. And that's where I think things really start to, where you get the nexus of all these old school and new school skills coming together, where you can do things that you used to have to spend thousands of dollars on.
Yeah.
You can do a reasonably good job yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think it's like anything else. A good balance is going to be needed in that. So, alrighty. I think we've beaten that one to death.
Yeah. Done.
Okay, so our next thing is our good friends at Apple. A couple of Apple stories. Apple's issued a global iOS update after an attempt to use spyware on an activist iPhone. So this was happened because a foreign government, and we have ideas, but we can't name names, of course, because nothing's
proven.
Probably the UAE, attempted to break into an iPhone of an activist using a previously unknown espionage software. So basically, there was three previously undisclosed weaknesses, but now these were out. So basically, fortunately, the activist was smart. He didn't open the link, and he sent it off to a lookout in Citizen Lab, and they figured out what was going on. So yeah, there was actually three separate zero-day exploits. And they decided to name the attack Trident, from Lookout and Citizen Lab, and these guys have been featured in other stories before. They actually do quite a bit of security research and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, so basically once that was out, Apple immediately they had to issue a fix for it. So there is a fix out there if you're worried about your phone getting hacked, particularly by foreign governments, because this software is actually for sale from an Israeli company, if I recall, according to the Guardian article. So yeah, and there's people.
Go ahead. Yeah, the company's name is NSO.
Yeah. So yeah. there's definitely this is definitely out there in the wild. I think most of our listeners don't really have to worry about foreign governments trying to figure out who they're texting. But, you know, just in case, one never knows. And it's always good to have this, because if this stuff's for sale, it's going to eventually get out. So, you know, even though it's an Israeli firm and, you know, you don't tend to want to pirate against the Israeli government. They have very bad sense of humor, those guys over there. I don't know why, but there you go. So, yeah, anyway, patch your iOS devices ASAP.
Yeah.
I've done mine. It works fine.
Yeah, you should be on iOS 9.3.5 when you're done.
Exactly. So there we go, kids. So, again, listen to Uncle Derek and Uncle Stuart.
Please.
Patch your devices. Please. Keep your password strong. Patch your devices, et cetera.
Yeah, and if you don't know the person texting you, don't go click a link. Don't go click the link they sent you, which is exactly how this was done. Thankfully,
I won't even click links that Derek sends me, kids, because, you know, who knows what will happen, you know, on my iPhone from his Android phone. So, you know,
exactly. Oh, my Android phone is just as secure as anybody's iPhone. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, exactly. We're all doomed. No. in all seriousness, yeah, do patch it. Okay, yeah. Next story. To no one's surprise, well, maybe some guy who hasn't been on the internet for a while, Apple has an iPhone event coming up, Derek, and it's scheduled for the 7th. And guess what? Apparently there's rumors that they're going to have an iPhone 7 there.
No way.
You see what they did there?
I do, but however...
They should have had it July 7th. Then it would be like 7-7, but, you know, I guess it wasn't ready.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But yes, of course, they're unveiling most likely the iPhone 7 on September 7th. However, the date does line up with most of their past events, which is the Wednesday after Labor Day.
Exactly. So
it just happened to be really good for them in this case.
Exactly. Now, of course, there's 28 million rumors. One big rumor is it's going to be strictly an iOS event, iPhone, possibly an iPad. But some people are saying as well, the Apple Watch and also their laptop line. But more and more, because the laptop line hasn't been updated in ages. I'm waiting for a new Air, but I don't think I'm going to get one. And I'm pretty sure, based on the rumors, that's going to be a separate event. Now, the biggest thing people are talking about here is, well, there's kind of two things. There's apparently a dual camera system for taking better photos. So that'll be kind of cool.
That'll be interesting.
Yep. But the big drawback is apparently there's a lot of strong speculation. They're going to be removing that headphone jack. So it's either going to be, people are saying either USB-C or Lightning. Everything's going to be Lightning. So, you know, all those headphones and all those accessories and mics and all that. So, you know, and it, you know what's interesting as well? There's a lot of people now saying, like, what do I really need a new phone for? Like, myself, I've got an iPhone 5. It's dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably going to wait to see what's announced. But I got to tell you, you know, and, you know, now let's put this little caveat out. You know, when Apple first got rid of the Super Drive, everyone moaned and went on. But really, when's the last time you used a CD drive on a MacBook?
Well, no. Hang on. That is a highly biased question. When was the last time you used a CD drive in a MacBook? Well, I can't. So the last time,
have one.
So the last, anyway, yeah, the last time exactly. I wanted to use one was 6 months ago. Because we had a customer say, hey, here's a backup of our database. Can you, like, you know, take this over to this new virtual machine you're setting up for us and, like, you know, restore it? Well, I literally did not have a device in the building that could do it. So thankfully, two things happened. One, we picked up some Windows laptops shortly after because we needed them for testing. Those obviously have optical drives, thank goodness. So we could use those. However, the actual big problem was that those discs that were provided to us weren't finalized, so you couldn't actually read anything off of them unless it was in the device that it was burnt from. So, yeah, it didn't end up working anyway, but
okay, so regardless, in other words, you tell me you're the exception to the rule.
No, because I know people who still okay, Xbox still uses discs. PS4 yes. uses discs. They're yes, going to continue using discs for the foreseeable future because
I agree, but not everybody but can get usually very high another speed. Alternative. Like if you're still using discs, A, you can buy a super drive connected to USB, right? But really, more and more we're getting away from optical discs.
Okay. Honestly though, Apple needs to give up the dongle thing. It's dongle well, for this, dongle what, for that, dongle exactly for this other thing. Like it's ridiculous, and it's one of the huge reasons why I won't buy Apple products.
And I think this here is going to be at least initially, there's going to be a lot of resistance. I don't like the idea of removing the headphone jack, and I think a lot of people are going to go. You know, as I was saying, I'm thinking to myself, well, if this comes out, you know, unless the camera's just amazing, would be perfectly happy with an older 6S.
But the camera's amazing compared to what? Compared to the past iPhone or compared to the latest and greatest, which by all accounts is the Samsung Galaxy S7, S7 Edge, and Note 7?
Well, yeah.
Apparently that camera is, according to a headline I saw recently, the best smartphone camera ever. Clarity, color, low light, etc. So it's got to be better than that and provide compelling... don't worry about the lack of a headphone jack story for me to be like, okay, that was smart. Well, I have a feeling I'm going to have a whole lot of snark on the 7th.
Oh, I may have a whole lot of snark as well. I think that's the thing. I think that's what's going to happen. Like myself, I don't really see a compelling reason to go to the 7, where a 6S would do me just fine. It's got a good enough camera. And it's got the headphone jacks and that, and you know, yes, there are Bluetooth headsets out there and earbuds and stuff like that.
They're
maybe
not great.
One day, but I can see this, you know, it's kind of like Microsoft time. Sometimes every other update, sometimes it doesn't quite work out for them. And we've seen this before with Apple, with the 4, we had the 5, typically it's the version 2 that does better.
Yeah, but I really feel like they've lost their way. This is if this happens, I don't know. It won't be the demise of Apple, but they're already down to 15% of global market share for smartphones, and I feel like that could be down to 13 or 14 in the next couple of years if this keeps up. This sort of thinking.
I think partially the price kills them too, especially outside the U.S. and European markets, the first world will say.
Yeah.
Not to be insulting anyone outside of those markets, but I think that's part of it. And yeah, I think a lot of people are going, do I need to spend $700 to $1,000 on a new device where this one I've had for 3 or 4 years? Guess what? It still works, depending on what you're looking at. And, you know, as I told you pre-show, I keep thinking to myself, you know, I'm at the point where, this iPhone 5 I have is dying. You know, what do I really use it for? And, I may look at alternatives. I don't know yet. We're going to see what happens. I'm very impressed with the 6 and the 6S. That would certainly meet my needs, and I could keep my apps and stuff like that, particularly because my wife's a huge Apple fan, and I think I'd have a very challenging time convincing her to move to Android. But again,
you know, I can help.
I know. Well, yeah, folks, if you have a spouse that loves BlackBerry, you know, contact Derek. His spouse is now using an Android device.
She will be.
She will be very
soon.
We're very pleased. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But
yeah,
I just don't. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. And there's a lot of people going to go, as you say, dongles. And there's going to be things like, do I need this? If I have to buy new accessories, new things, do I need it? And it'll be interesting to see what comes out. I'm really hoping, again, I doubt I'll see it. I would love to see a bit of a refresh on the MacBook Air, but it looks like that's not going to happen. It looks like they're going to be focusing on the MacBook Pro, which is a shame because, again, I'll be in the market soon. My 6-year-old MacBook is really starting to show its age. Mm-hmm. And again, I look at some of the new things there, and I can't justify a full-on MacBook. All I need is an Air. 8 gig 256 SSD, and that'd be fine. It's the one I used when I was at our traction, and it worked great, and that's what I need.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Apple's going to have to. Yeah, I think Apple has to kind of realize that, yeah, not everyone needs certain things, and there's particularly after a long upgrade. Because, again, they can't count on, like in the old days, people would upgrade their PCs at least every 3 or 4 years. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
This MacBook I have is early 2011 model, and it would probably still work. I could probably wipe it, but I'd like the lightness and the battery life of the Air. But, you know, I'm not going to rush out right away. And again, so I'm just going to see what they happen on either on the 7th or another event. And we'll see what happens there. Do you have anything else on this before we move on?
No.
Okay. Perfect. That's good. Okay. Now for the kids. WhatsApp. Another social media thing, which I don't use. No, just kidding. WhatsApp privacy backlash. Facebook bought them a couple of years ago, right?
About a year, year and a half ago,
Yeah,
for $17 billion or something like that.
Have we gotten our cut yet, by the way?
I don't want a cut from that. That's okay.
I'll take 1%. That would be half of 1%. We could retire, both of us.
I'll take $100,000. That's enough.
And then we could do this. Then we could do this full time and really annoy people.
Sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of people that are kind of PO'd about this. And you know what? I realized I actually put the wrong link on here. The link on the thing there. But
I wasn't going to say anything. But
you weren't going to say anything. Okay.
No,
but anyway.
Not yet.
All right, I will find the link. You want to briefly sum up what they're talking about?
Yeah, I can, thankfully, because I have read the story. So, Facebook did buy WhatsApp roughly 18 months ago. And WhatsApp's founder, can't remember his name, was vehement about the fact that WhatsApp was not going to change. They were just going to be owned by Facebook. That's the only difference. They're going to have this big war chest to, you know, go after the world, basically. And lo and behold, that's not true. So what's actually happening now is that Facebook is saying that they're going to use the number you've got on WhatsApp to link to your profile on Facebook so that they know the fact that you've got a WhatsApp account and a Facebook account. They'll be able to know that. And then they're going to use that information to sell better targeted advertising at you. What a surprise. There's a couple things happening here. You won't be able to opt out of, if Facebook knows your phone number and WhatsApp obviously knows your phone number, they're going to be able to figure out who you are on WhatsApp.
Right.
However, you can go in and change your settings so that no further information is shared between WhatsApp and Facebook. So that's nice. However, of course, it's automatic opt-in, so you're going to have to manually opt out. I don't use WhatsApp.
No, neither do I.
I used WhatsApp about 6 months ago because an Olio client said, we really like WhatsApp. We want you to use their messaging feature as inspiration for what you built for us in our app, for our internal business app. And we said, okay, fine. Then obviously we should check this out. I really didn't find anything special about it. It was like a mobile version of MSN Messenger or ICQ.
It
really wasn't anything cool. I understand it's free. One thing that did happen after Facebook bought them is they did away with the first year free and then you pay 99 cents deal. But then, of course, that left me wondering, well, then how are they going to monetize this? This is not free to run.
Right.
And you've got encryption end to end and everything. So like, this is not cheap necessarily either. So this is how they want to use your WhatsApp data, pair it up with your Facebook data, assuming you have one of each, or assuming you have your cell phone number on your Facebook profile. I don't, thankfully. And they're going to match it up as much as they can and sell better advertising. Where have we heard that before?
I know. Well, someone's got to pay the server bill.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And as you say, encryption is not cheap. But yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. But again, it'll be one of those, you know, will WhatsApp become a flash in the pan? will it slowly die off and then people will just stop using it? And,
maybe in North America, yes, but it is so ingrained now in some developing countries like Brazil, where the courts hate it. Hate WhatsApp. They're constantly going after WhatsApp and trying to put injunctions in against WhatsApp even operating, because WhatsApp cannot provide, they cannot respond to the subpoenas with the data that the courts are looking for.
Gosh darn.
Yeah, the poor things. And Indonesia, I'm pretty sure, uses WhatsApp very heavily, and places like that where texting is extremely expensive for whatever crazy reason, right. Even though it literally costs carriers nothing.
Nothing. It backbones off other data. Exactly.
Exactly. It piggybacks. It's like, oh, there's nothing happening on the line right now, or like there's some data going through. Add this 160 bit piece of information with some header on it over there. Like, that's it. It's literally free for the air carriers to run. Yep. But for some reason, in countries like Brazil, it's extremely expensive to use SMS. So instead, they have Wi-Fi, or the data plan is cheaper, you know, relatively speaking. And so they use WhatsApp.
And that's one thing, you know, the internet's done many things. One of the things it's done is it's fostered competition.
Yes.
It forces people to sharpen their pencils. You know, we don't want to see anyone going out of business, but it forces people to sharpen their pencils and find the correct price for what something is. And yeah, exactly. So, all righty, let's move on. We know we're going to move on with now, Derek. We're going to move on with a pre-recorded Olio ad. And it's our second pre-recorded Olio ad.
Thanks for making that super obvious.
Super obvious. Well, you know, it's 2A. I don't know how many takes the person did. I just know it sounds pretty awesome.
So. Two.
Exactly. Two? Oh, okay. See, yeah, he has the insight source. Silva. Two take Silva. One take Clark and two take Silva. Yeah. If you believe either of us, oh boy. All right. Here we go. Here's the ad. We do thank them for their support. You see, wasn't that a wonderful ad? Wasn't it, Derek? See,
it was, if I do say so myself.
I bet you some people are right now scrambling on their podcast players to listen to that again.
They better be.
They better be.
On iTunes or whatever the podcast app is called now, and on Pocket Cast, you just hit the back button 3 times, and you'll get to hear the whole thing.
See, perfect. See, we even helped you there. Yeah. So, but as always, we do thank Olio for their support. They always do cool stuff there. One of these days, I got to get in the office and get the grand tour. I really do. But at some point,
it won't take long. But yeah, sure. Come on over.
I'll just show up one day. Exactly.
Yeah, that's fine.
Exactly. All right. So, next story. Chromecast, the ultra enemy of the Apple TV. No, just kidding. Just an alternative thing. I've actually played it. It's pretty cool. But hey, here's something for once. Canadian Chromecast owners, not US. Notice I said Canadian.
Yes.
They can now get $20 in Play Store credit. Okay, Mr. Android, tell us all about it.
Yeah, so if you've purchased one recently, if you've purchased a second generation Chromecast device recently or about to, there's a link on the show notes, which takes you to, then they have a link that says head on over to this link and you get yourself a $20 credit for Google Play. You need to do it before October 8th, but existing and future Google Chromecast owners, a little link, it's google.ca/intl/en_ca for English and Canada, of course, /Chromecast/get-offers. Don't worry about it. Just go to the Android Authority story, click on the link, and what do you need to do here? Probably should have checked this out. You click a button. You click a button, and it looks like it just gives it to you. So that's cool.
Yeah. So tell us, what sort of things can we get on the Google Play Store?
Oh, gosh, just about anything. So the Google Play Store itself is divided into apps, music, movies, books. Those four things, and the $20 works on any of that.
Get Netflix.
You could get
Netflix, Spotify.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. I was gonna say, I don't know if you can
Netflix and jamming out to music on Spotify.
Okay, cool. I would probably spend it on apps or
Yep.
in-app purchases personally, going premium on some apps like Pocket Casts, for instance,
There you go.
or maybe get some Pokemon Go, Poke Coins, which I know you're
Hey,
super
there you
thrilled
go.
about, and that sort of thing. So that's probably what I would do. Get apps and in-app purchases and things like that. Maybe some music. You can the Chromecast is really cool. If you don't have a Roku or for your Android, or you don't have an Apple TV, you can use it to cast your entire screen. You can use it to cast within apps. And the Chromecast audio, which is really neat, only does audio, but you can plug it into an old speaker and turn this old speaker that's been lying around for maybe 30 years, and jam to your smartphone
That's
tunes
very cool.
through it.
Very
So
cool.
yeah, lots of
Very
different
cool.
options. The normal Chromecast has an HDMI port that obviously connects to TVs, and I'm pretty sure it's HDCP compatible, so you don't have to worry about not being able to stream certain things
Right. Well,
because
that's
it.
nice. Yeah, because we played with the first generation one at work a couple of years ago, and it was kind of impressive. Now I'm going to put you on the spot. I didn't ask you this in advance, and I should have. So is the pricing fairly similar to the second generation Chromecast models? Do you
I
know
think
off
they're
the top of
like
your head?
I think they're 35 bucks.
So still very low priced. Yeah,
Yes, yeah,
exactly.
very
So
affordable.
yeah, it's
yeah, I mean, compared to a Roku at 79,
yeah, or an
79.99 or what
Apple
have
at
you.
100.
Yeah, like 150 bucks, I think, 150
Yeah.
bucks. So, yeah, this is it's great. And breaking news,
Oh, wait, there's more.
Google Chrome now has full cast support. So anything you're doing in Chrome now, you'll be able to cast to a TV or to a Chromecast audio and listen through there.
That'll be nice. It's kind of similar to what we do with AirPlay.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly,
on
with
the
the Apple
side. Yeah, and
TV.
that'll be nice for businesses and stuff like that. I think that's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to the science section.
Last story.
A story. Well, second last. I added another one on you. I was
Oh,
sorry. I can't believe we
Internet
forgot
Day.
about.
Oh, this is going to be
Yeah, well,
controversial.
I know, but I can't believe we forgot about it. But anyway,
I
okay, it's true.
specifically avoided it, but that's okay.
I know, but I had to put it in because I remember it. Anyway,
Jeez.
let's go back to the science first before we go
Yes.
back to ancient history. Okay, so as we all know, a lot of scientists are out there looking for planets orbiting other stars in
Exoplanets.
exoplanets in our galaxy. And there's something called a Goldilocks zone, where they predict that, yeah, this is the most odds of chance of life of some sort. Now, let's keep in mind the Goldilocks zone for the solar system where we are has three planets, Mercury, or sorry, Venus, Earth, and Mars. And as we know, Venus is a little bit too warm, Mars is a little bit too cold, and Earth is just right. But anyway, they've actually discovered Proxima Centauri, which is, I believe it's the third closest from the sun.
It's the
They
closest star to
say
the
now.
sun.
Yeah. So they basically which is like 4.3 light years away.
Yes.
They say now it's like a smaller red, not a red dwarf, it's a smaller sun. They think there is a exoplanet in the Goldilocks zone. Right now they're calling it Proxima B. Now the interesting thing is, of course, this orbit, it orbits its star every 11 days because it's that much closer. Now, of course, you may be going, well, how can it be closer? Wouldn't it burn up? You got to remember this Proxima is a pretty small reddish star.
Yeah.
It's actually classified as a red dwarf, so it can be really close and it's not as bad. But yeah, so yeah, Proxima Centauri, it's actually part of a three-star system. Alpha Centauri A and B are also in there, and a lot of science fiction is
Okay. Something's going on with Stuart's audio, so that's okay. I will take over here and hopefully he comes back soon. So yes, Proxima B, we know a few things about it. Like Stuart said, it does orbit its star every 11.2 days. It's about 7.5 million kilometers away from Centaura. Sorry, Proxima Centauri. That's about 5% of the distance that Earth lies from our sun, obviously. So, but as Stuart said, despite that, because it is
yes.
orbiting a red dwarf, it only gets 65% of the radiation that Earth does from the sun. So, less radiation there. without an atmosphere, it probably has what's called an equilibrium temperature of minus 40 degrees Celsius. Here, if we did not have an atmosphere, the surface temperature would be minus 20. So things are actually looking pretty decent there. Might be a little bit cooler.
Not bad.
Yeah, might
not
be a little bad. Bit cooler day to day, but livable, obviously. And yep. And finally, we feel like or we have determined that the planet has at least 1.3 Earth masses. So it's at least as massive as Earth, probably a little bit more, and you know, could be up to 2 once we get a little bit closer, get some better pictures. Yep. Sign me up. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
4.2 light years? No problem.
No problem. Yeah, just next door practically. Now, it's interesting because a bunch of sci-fi over the years, they've always had stories about Alpha Centauri and Proxima Centauri having life and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And it very well could. That's the thing.
Wouldn't that be cool right now if someone's in their telescope looking at us and they see, oh, there's 3 planets in this Goldilocks zone. Hope they haven't screwed up all 3.
Yeah, no, only 2 so far.
Well, yeah, but the problem is all that TV and audio of the current U.S. elections on its way out there. You know, they might just decide to exterminate us or just say, hey, we're just going to put a great big red banner all around the system saying, do not enter. They're crazy.
Yeah. So one nice thing in terms of like evolutionary status is that the Proxima Centauri solar system is already 4.85 billion years old. So, you know, evolutionarily, speaking in evolutionary terms,
yep.
I gotta get my words right here. There's no reason why there should not be life in that system, exactly. Which is fantastic.
Exactly. Now, I know SETI has pointed stuff down there. It's actually, you actually can't see those stars from the northern hemisphere. It's actually the southern hemisphere. Mm. It's almost not quite due south, but it's a fairly steep angle to the south in relation to where the Earth orbits. But yeah, they haven't, you know, over the years, it's always been one of the first targets, but they've also discounted it because, again, the 2 alpha stars have a very weird orbit. Like they orbit each other.
Yeah.
And then Proxima is just a little bit further away. The concern was always whatever orbit a planet may have, it may take it too close to the alpha stars and we just bake it every so often. So this is, this is interesting news and hopefully we're going to hear more about it. Okay. And I don't know why my mic disappeared. Maybe the aliens are onto us. I don't know. Those Proxima Centauris, you know, I don't know.
Can we call them Proximans? That'd be kind of cool.
Proximans, sure. And then the Alphans will be Alphans. Alphans and Proxima.
Alphans.
Whatever. Okay, like let's move on.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, I had to throw this in. I know Derek confessed. Here's the sigh. 25 years ago, the first web page actually went public. That wasn't created. It was made public. And I remember this, actually, because I was just a little bit on the internet here and there. I would go up to Western and poke about and stuff like that. And back then, we had things like FTP and Archie and Veronica and all that old stuff. And Telnet. We never didn't have web pages. And it was, I remember hearing about this and this slowly grew. And here we are today.
Yeah. So the reason I have a problem with it is that Tim Berners-Lee himself, who created the first website, has debunked this completely arbitrary date of August 22nd. He's like, I don't know where you people are getting this from. You know, this is not. This is not like.
Might be a bit bitter. He might be a bit bitter because you know if he got even a penny for every web page.
I don't think he's about the money though. He's been knighted. Who cares about money? Yeah. I'm sure he's doing fine.
Yep.
Yeah. He went on a little rant online and he's like, "This is bupkis. Like, don't celebrate August 22nd. This is ridiculous." So. Because the man himself says so, I was literally avoiding putting this in here for that reason. So
and you knew I couldn't resist. So
wow, I didn't know you threw it in there until after the fact. But
yeah, yes. But no, you know what? I always remember this quite well. And the thing I really remember when the web really became kind of big was when Shoemaker Levy 9 hit Jupiter.
Yes, I remember that.
Okay, do you remember that? And I remember being up at Western in the astronomy department, July in 1992, and we were getting some stuff. We were getting a lot of the data initially, the astronomers up there and that, you know, some of the images through FTP and that. But I remember we were looking at web pages, getting some of the stuff off, the raw pictures off of Hubble. They would, the team at Caltech and NASA, they were, and JPL, they were taking the pictures from Hubble and they were throwing it up to the FTP sites, but they also realized they had a pretty good audience, the early press of that, by throwing it up on their web server. And I remember that really, really well. That was July of 94, when that happened.
Yeah. Shoemaker Levy 9. Oh man, I remember that.
Yep.
That was incredible to just get these really grainy black and white shots of this comet impacting Jupiter at the time.
Yeah, I know, just amazing. And we were, you know, we had to wait a little while because, of course, for the time it takes. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And we also have to thank the Galileo space probe, because it actually saw a lot of the impacts as they occurred. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And again, Galileo did that. It was kind of cool. I do remember that too. Back when web pages didn't have backgrounds and they were this gray color and use this, you know, you use some weird browsers and stuff like that. So, yeah. And look where we are today.
So did you know that related to Shoemaker Levy 9, that on July 19th, 2009, exactly 15 years after the SL9 impacts, a new black spot about the size of the Pacific Ocean, so, you know, pretty small, appeared in Jupiter's southern hemisphere. Thermal infrared measurements showed the impact site was warm, and spectroscopic analysis detected the production of excess hot ammonia and silica-rich dust in the upper regions of Jupiter's atmosphere.
So Jupiter had a burrito.
Yes. No, that's methane.
Sorry.
And then scientists have concluded that another impact event had occurred, but this time a more compact and strong object, probably a small undiscovered asteroid, was the cause. That's cool. Well,
it is cool because people don't realize Jupiter actually acts like a guardian for the inner planets quite a bit, because its gravity is pretty massive. And
it's huge.
You know, the odd time one gets away from us.
Of course.
Possible some of the extinction level events may have been caused by something that Jupiter flung in.
True.
But mostly, yeah, it does a pretty good job of kind of sanitizing incoming stuff that comes in. So we should thank that. But no, I remember that event because I actually had a buddy's scope, and we actually went out and we, you know, he had like some super huge scope and was able to take long-term pictures. And we actually saw some pictures of that event. Not as it happened, obviously, but the dark spot.
Yeah.
It was like a pixel big. You kind of go, oh, yeah, okay. But it was there. Yeah, it was.
But it happened, and I was there.
He didn't have Hubble. You know, you haven't put it that way. But you could tell something was a little bit different. And, again, that's why astronomy is still one of the citizen, you know, where citizens can still play a part, citizen science.
Yeah.
So that's why we talk about it here, too. So, anyway, moving on. How about this for a segue? That's perfect, actually, Derek, because, you know, stuff we like.
Oh, yes.
Look at mine. Space Engine. So, you know, I was looking the other day and I'm reading some of the reviews of No Man's Sky and stuff like that. Well, there's actually something called Space Engine. It's been around for a while and I hadn't heard of this before, but it's a free simulation program that lets you explore the universe in three dimensions, from planet Earth to the most distant galaxy. Areas of the known universe are represented using actual astronomical data, while regions uncharted are generated procedurally. And that's what No Man's Sky does. It basically computes it on the fly.
Yeah.
I looked at the trailer. I've got to download it still. I haven't downloaded it yet because the base image is 1 gig in size. Needless to say, they recommend a torrent, but the graphics look pretty cool. So it's one of these like space simulation things, and it's, open source. People have been involved with it for quite a while. They've actually raised just over $45,000. Towards an 80,000 goal for some new things they want to do. It looks pretty impressive. So if you like science and stuff like that, definitely, give this a whirl. Some of the stuff they've done in the screenshots that look absolutely amazing, just for something to check out. So that's at spaceengine.org. And again, we'll have a link in the show notes. Okay, what do you have, my friend?
I have GitLab. GitLab is developers might have already heard of it. So when you're an agency or a Sears developer, you have a code repository where you put your stuff, because just putting it all over on your hard drive or whatever is not safe, obviously. And when you have it in a code repository, you can roll back to previous versions. You can have multiple people working on the same file and merge the changes together. You can do reviews. You can file bugs and so on and so forth. GitLab is this tool that was released a few years ago. There's an open source version and an enterprise version as well. Both are very, very cool. It's all open source, but the community edition is the free one, and you can host it yourself, or you can get a free hosted version as well by GitLab, which I would recommend, because trying to install it myself last week was not easy.
I've heard that.
Yeah,
I've heard it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it is, mostly because it requires Ruby, which I am not familiar with at all. And so I kind of had to give up, and I was like, I'm just going to let them host it. Forget it. But anyway, it's really, really cool. So it basically not only does it handle your code repository, it has idea management, issue management. You can do your planning in there. Obviously, you store your code. You can do commits. You can do your testing, your code review. It'll help you with your staging environment. It'll help deploy to your production environment. And you can collect feedback all in one application. But it doesn't, it seems like it does everything really well, which is fantastic and rare. And more recently, they unveiled a Trello-like tool, a Kanban board, called the Issue Board, where you can track your issues and also mark them complete. And the really cool thing about that is if you do mark an issue complete, it automatically just takes care of everything in the background related to that. So it automates a lot of the nitty gritty that you normally need to take care of. But you can label things, you can put hashtags on them. Really, really neat. So if you're looking for a replacement for Bitbucket or Git, some sort of other thing, or if you're moving from like SVN or something like that, definitely check out gitlab.com. It's really, really cool. And
yeah, I've even used it as a non-developer, because we've used it on some community projects for like London Trash.
Oh, there you go.
For putting things in like in code documentation or whatever, we do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, very, very impressed by what it can do. You know, that was my first look at programming again, the state of it in like 20 years. And I was amazed on what can be done now. So yeah, definitely, definitely recommend it. There's a good community behind it. So, and people much smarter than me, like developers, recommend it. So, hey, what can I say? All right. What are we up to lately? I'm still looking at a few video tools. I mentioned last week on the podcast that I was starting to play around with some YouTube and that. And then a listener who knows Derek got a hold of him and basically said, don't let him use, what was he?
Premiere. Adobe Premiere.
Yeah. Yeah. So he said, have a look at this Resolve. So it's called DaVinci Resolve. And yeah, I've just started to look at it. It's pretty powerful. Looks like quite a learning curve, but I'm going to have a look at that and play around with it. Cause I definitely want to make some better trailers and stuff for like a YouTube channel and for stuff like that. Cause I want to get into a little bit of, you know, I love the podcasting, but I also want to get into a little bit of video, just a little bit to support the podcast and stuff like that. Okay. And you've been busy as well. I see.
I have. I finally made some progress. So I had to postpone last night because I had a pounding headache. And then, of course, because I napped from like 7:30, 8 o'clock until 9-something, well, then I was awake. And so despite the headache, I was not ready to go to sleep yet. So I was up for a little while, then a little longer than I wanted to be. And so I figured, well, I might as well do something. And so, yeah, I got the domains page finally done for CleverHost. I've decided to just port whatever content I have over to get this done. And then I wanted to rewrite pretty much everything, but I don't have the time right now. So I'm just going to port everything over, get that done, hopefully before I go on vacation. And hopefully that's up mid next week. I set up my new iZone 2.0 security camera. I had it in my kitchen, just pointing at the front door for a little while. And I was like, okay, well, you know, one of the benefits of this thing is that it'll mount pretty much anywhere, even upside down. So now I've got it in my front window pointing at my a little bit of my front door, my front yard, my my driveway. So if anybody decides to mess with my stuff now, I'm definitely going to catch them on camera, which is cool. And there's been a lot of that here in Kilworth lately, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And we're getting rid of the BlackBerry this week. Probably moving. Don't send hate mail about this. Probably moving to Bell, my wife to Bell, and getting her a Samsung Galaxy S7. Don't bother sending me email. Don't bother sending me tweets. It's not a done deal yet, but everything we've heard says that, unfortunately, Bell is probably the way to go. And every carrier has a ridiculous trade-in program right now on the Galaxy S7, where basically if you could bring back a Motorola StarTAC right now and they'll give you $200 off.
Oh, wow.
Literally. So I've got a Nexus S here. We have an LG Neon. Feel free to look that one up.
I got my mother-in-law's old, 10-year-old flip phone. Holy cow.
Yeah, so if you want a Galaxy S7, you can take that to Bell, Rogers, or Telus right now, and they will give you $200 off, which at Bell or Rogers would make the phone free.
There you go. It's a good phone.
It is a very good phone. All the review, I know how to get rid of the Samsung cruft, or at least the stuff that makes the phone unusable, like TouchWiz,
right,
and the Flipboard integration instead of Google Now. Get out of here. So I'm going to put the Google Now launcher on there. I'm going to put the Google search engine, or the Google search app, to make sure Google Now works. I'll get rid of the Flipboard widget and stuff like that. And and then it'll be and the Google keyboard, of course. And it'll be just like a Nexus phone. Awesome. And Samsung has committed to pushing out the monthly security updates that Google provides for Android. So that'll help keep things secure.
Okay, cool. We should also point out, you did mention you're going on vacation.
I am.
So you're not going to be here for two shows.
I'm not.
For the 11th and the 18th, if I recall.
Correct.
So I may have to put the shout out and see if anyone's going to try and play the role of Derek.
Get James. Oh, that's a tough task.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's going to be challenging.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
A few people. Yeah, we'll talk to Jameson. We'll talk to a few other people. Maybe I'll see if I can get that. Since for the first show, it's just after the Apple event. Maybe I'll get that Derek Martin to come in. You know, he is the world's most interesting man, and he's an Apple fan. So.
Well, then he's not the world's most interesting man.
Oh no! You should see some of the stuff he's done. You should.
Oh no! I've seen a lot of it, but the fact that he is a big Apple fan immediately disqualifies him from that title.
All right, I may have to get him on just to have him count. We'll see. You'll have to catch the show in Portugal when you're sitting there, you know, having fun, getting spoiled
on the beach. Yeah,
on the beach by your relatives, watching the Euro Cup. Watching the Euro Cup replay again and again with the old boys, reliving glories,
yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah, as an England fan, you can tell I'm not bitter, am I? No, not.
I'll just be drinking my caipirinhas on the beach and hanging out with whales and dolphins and.
Yeah, attaboy. That's gonna attaboy. Be fun. Good for you. Good for you. No, well deserved. Exactly. So, okay. So we're going to wrap this up. Don't forget, follow and like our page on Facebook. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Don't forget to review us on iTunes, Google Play, wherever else you get your podcasts. Retweet us. Tell a friend. Call a friend. Whatever. Let people know about it. You know, if you want to, I would say fire up a flare, but I wouldn't do that. but you know. Maybe we should maybe get, web graphics. People can share it, or they can change the little Twitter icons, like they do for those big causes.
Sure.
We should get
like a Twibbon?
Yeah, a Twibbon. We'll get a Canadian Tech Podcast Twibbon.
Oh,
I'll talk,
fun.
You know what, we'll go down to the design department, and we'll talk to the boys and girls down there and see what they have. Yeah, they're tough to find sometimes. They're really deep and dark down in the dungeon, but. We'll see what happens. Yeah. Okay. I think that's enough silliness for 1 week. So for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 84 from Monday, August 29th, 2016. I almost forgot one thing. Thank you to techdose.ca for the loan of the snowball mic. If you need general tech support, give them a call. Give Kristen a call, techdose.ca. Anyway, on Monday, August 29th, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Mothra Silva.
Thank you, and be well.